Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's just seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, going to be your host today for Juneau Afternoon. I have a great lineup of guests. We're honored to have Paul Rosenthal here to tell us about a concert that's coming up in Juneau with Zul Bailey, cellist, going to be performing, and we'll hear all about that. The City Museum will be dropping in to tell us about the latest showings at the now reopened for the rest of the summer season, the City Museum. Margie Hamburger will be here. Food Truck Friday is going on, so the Juneau Cello Choir, Catherine Wilkins, will drop in to tell us about what they're going to be doing. They're one of the performers tonight. And Lynette Hart, the Coco Diva, oh, I hope she brings samples, is going to come over and tell us about the chocolate that she makes in Gustavus, and she will be selling them at Food Truck Friday. So stay tuned for Juneau Afternoon. Time now for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Wisconsin's 11 tribes have voted to boycott a board that would oversee investment money from an open-pit iron ore mine. They say the state won't listen to them. Mike Simonson reports.
The 7-member Mining Investment and Local Impact Fund Board has representatives from the mining area. What this board won't have is a tribal representative. It's up to the Great Lakes Intertribal Council to appoint someone. This week, Intertribal Council Director Mike Allen says they decided it wouldn't do any good.
No need for it. They felt that didn't want to be like a token Indian with this thing.
Allen says it was a consensus vote. They want the EPA and federal government involved.
And had them start questioning it, and you know, so they can put a stop to this and see what kind of damage this mine can do for not only the tribal people, but the state of Wisconsin. And we're going to lose this forever.
The Battle River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe stands to take the brunt of impact from what would be the largest iron ore mine in North America. Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins says since they are downstream from it, tribal leaders must protect the air and water and the ability to hunt, fish, and gather.
Number one, they're non-negotiable. And number two, they're trust assets that even the U.S. government understands that we need in place in order to survive into the future.
Wiggins says this committee will not have manna from heaven, only breadcrumbs.
These communities are sitting there being led down a slaughterhouse canal, and the state's just watching idly by.
He says the best option for jobs is farming and food cooperatives in that region. Meanwhile, a spokesperson from Governor Walker's office says the seat will remain vacant, and they'll continue to work with the tribes. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
In Alaska, about 100 people recently visited the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association office in Anchorage. They were there to celebrate the publication of a book. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes reports.
Eliodor Filimonov, who contributed some of the Anungan language text in the book, translated the book's title.
Kakamero. Kakamero means to hunt or fish for food and collect plants and subsistence and whatever is edible out there.
The book includes recipes for dishes that call for fur seal flippers and seagull eggs, and others that combine local and Western ingredients. Author Sue Ann Unger says the book also includes stories from elders and much more.
Hundreds of words in Unangam Tanu are in the book in both Eastern and Atkin dialect, and a lot of cultural historical information teased out of a lot of different resources from our region.
Dr. Gary Ferguson of the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium told the audience the recipes, wisdom, and knowledge in the book can help prevent chronic diseases such as diabetes and heart disease. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
The United Nations recognizes August 9th as the International Day of the World's Indigenous People. This year's theme is centered around implementing the rights of Indigenous people through policies and programs, and working with governments and the UN. A forum discussing the theme will be held today at UN headquarters in New York. A world conference on Indigenous peoples is scheduled to take place in September. Meanwhile, ahead of the UN Day, Amnesty International released a report called Indigenous Peoples' Long Struggle to Defend Their Rights in the Americas. The report shows inequalities and human rights violations, like violence, discrimination, and other issues Indigenous people face. Professional basketball player Shoni Schimmel was in the Pacific Northwest with the Atlanta Dream Thursday. Her team took on the Seattle Storm in Washington. Schimmel is from the Umatilla Reservation in Oregon. The basketball guard is a rising star in the WNBA. She's known for her res ball style of play and attracts fans from across Indian country to her games. According to the Associated Press, last night's game was sold out. Native fans also turned out in crowds earlier this week to see her play in Phoenix. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Not voting is not rebelling, it's surrendering. Your voice counts when you vote. First, you have to register. Find out more at nativevote.org. Brought to you by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes after 3 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting Juneau Afternoon today. My first guests are a great honor to have the gentleman who actually, I think, started the Sitka Summer Music Festival and has been a light in the musical world of Alaska for a long, long time. Paul Rosenthal is here, along with the administrator and production
manager
of the Juneau Jazz and Classics. Reggie Sharp is here. So, folks, we're here to talk about a concert that is coming up on August 30th, Saturday, and this is Zool Bailey going to play three concertos. What a wonderful opportunity. We've all in Juneau heard Zool play wonderful things before. And so how did we come to the idea of presenting three concertos?
Well, I think it was Zool's idea to do the three concertos.
Uh-huh.
He's been busy with his repertoire and thought that it would make a nice presentation. He always makes nice presentations.
He really does.
Yeah, and they're always different, too.
I noticed on the publicity it said Zool's concerts always sell out early, so you should get tickets. And that is absolutely true. The tickets are available at the Jack Box Office, Hearthside Books, and through the Juneau Jazz and Classics office. And there's also a button on the website that gets you through to being able to purchase a ticket for the concert.
That's
be a good idea to do one of those things if you want to go to this concert, because it's going to be at the Jack, which does unfortunately limit the seating to some extent. So you want to get in early and make sure you've got a good chair. So, Reggie, this is a fundraiser kind of thing. This is part of the way in which the Juneau Jazz and Classics gets its operating funding, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
It's a benefit concert for
right. And then
Juneau Jazz and Classics.
And then you'll have some other similar benefit concerts coming up, or events.
We do. We have Swingin' in New Year's Eve coming on December 31st, of course, on New Year's Eve. And then this spring we'll have Midori coming. Midori Gatto, the world-famous violinist, is coming to play and to conduct workshops here in Juneau.
Mm-hmm. That'll be a wonderful thing. That's in February.
Yes, February 10th.
Yeah, okay. And then the actual Juneau Jazz and Classics comes back to us for another wonderful run for 2 weeks coming up in May, right?
Yes, 16 wonderful days starting May 1st through May 16th.
Mm-hmm. Are season tickets for 2015 already on sale? Or?
Not yet.
They
will be soon, though. They will by January 1st.
Is there an advantage to buying early? Do you give a discount?
We give package discounts.
All right.
So the more you buy, the bigger the discount you get.
I can't think of a better Christmas present for somebody than to arrange the pre-purchase of a ticket, even though you're not putting them on sale until January, to have it all set up.
We will have it set up for gift certificates. We certainly will.
Outstanding. So when we were talking before the program, Paul, we were talking about the fact that this series of concertos almost like recreates the history of or the development of concertos through time.
Well, it's probably worth talking about the fact that the concerto itself is a guarantee that it's something major and important. Mm-hmm. You know, when composers write concertos, it means that they decided to write a full-length work, and they're going to pour their best material into it and work out on the best material in a very grand way. And these three works certainly represent each of the musical periods that they're doing in that way. Haydn, the great classical composer. Saint-Saëns was a magnificent romantic. And Prokofiev is one of the great 20th century giants. And each of them presented his kind of ideas, worked out the way that he likes to work them out. Now, the thing with the concerto, though, is that it is, in fact, a piece for a soloist with orchestra. And Zool is going to be presenting them the way they used to be presented before orchestras were everywhere, with the piano reduction. So the piano Susan Wingrove, who's a lovely pianist and a lovely lady, will be the Susan Philharmonic, and she will play the orchestral reduction for the cellist, which will be featured in, therefore, an even more prominent kind of way. And Zul will, of course, talk a little bit about the works that he's going to play, and he makes a beautiful presentation. So it's something you really do want to hear.
The thing that happens with these concerts that Zul does is there's this sense of intimacy. It's almost like going to somebody's house and having them play beautiful music for you. You know, Zul really is very comfortable with an audience, and it's like you sit there and you listen to him talk about the music, and it's like listening to a good friend of yours, you know,
who
knows
agree.
A lot about music. It's a wonderful and a very different experience than you think of when you go to a concert hall.
He communicates beautifully with and apart from the instrument, and when you combine the two, it's really special.
Yeah. This is going to be a real treat. It's a wonderful thing. Can you talk a little bit about how the concerto changes through those three periods? What the differences are? What should we look for when we listen? I'm sure Zul will point this out to us, but give us a preview if you can.
Well, musicians are used to thinking of three periods in music, although that's a very arbitrary thing. But they're used to think of a classical period. And just as with classical poetry or classical literature, things tend to be done in a certain kind of formal way. You know, the way people would greet each other in the street with a bow and a flourish, you know, that's quite different from the way they might greet each other 100 years later when Romanticism is flourishing and the world has an industrial revolution and people have a different way of life. They dress differently and they greet each other differently and they love each other differently and they make groups of people together differently, and so romantic tends to be just what it sounds like. It's music of the deep soul, exploring the deep soul. And then we came into what is generally called contemporary, although Prokofiev is music from your grandfather's time, after all, or older than that even. But the 20th century, this particular work is, what, from the 1940s, I guess, and it was a lousy century. If you lived in Russia, it was a particularly lousy century, and if you were Prokofiev and you got out of Russia, you sort of had the cosmopolitan flair to write European music with all the good suffering enclosed that being Russian implied, and you get a different picture of the world. So you're going to get three very different world pictures.
Where is the concerto today? Are concertos being written by modern 21st century musicians?
They are being written today.
And is it still the undertaking of a major work? Is this still?
Yes, it tends to be. It tends to be. I have my own prejudices, and they do not tend to lie in what's being done today so much as what happened before. It's just the way of it, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm not the best person to ask about what's happening today because I don't really mostly. I'm not in love with what's happening today.
But it's
another lousy century.
A frank answer. So have you performed concertos in your career?
Oh, frequently, yes, my goodness.
And the difference here, the viola has this, what I'm trying to find a word here, and I'm not getting it. The viola's voice is so totally different from the violin in the sense that the viola kind of takes a kind of vibrates you here as opposed to higher.
Think of the cello. Oh, but you want to vibrate.
I'm sorry. I meant to say cello. The cello is a different, much different listening experience than the violin.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing, the cello. It's just you know, the cello sits right against the stomach of the performer, uh-huh, and the chest of the performer, and you get those vibrations. You really do. It's a very human voice, very wonderful, wonderful instrument. And it's grand. You know, the voice goes down to a low C. I can't get there right now.
Right.
And it goes up to a high Q, which I can't get to either. but it's a very, very flexible and beautiful voice. It goes from deep bass to beautiful soprano, and they're all wonderful.
Now, contrast that just so we can find a place to sort of sit here. Do that with the violin.
The violin is a female voice.
Okay.
The lowest notes, G,
uh-huh,
and the highest note.
Yes.
I can't quite get there either. If you hear some birds singing outside, that'll do it for you.
Okay. Yeah. And so when a composer decides that the concerto is going to focus on the cello or focus on the violin, How does that relate to the thought process that goes into producing the concerto?
Well, I don't think it's really different from saying I'm going to write a play about Hamlet, or I'm going to write a play about Gypsy Rose Lee or what have you. You know, just, I have an idea. I'm going to work on it. It seems to fit into this this place, and this is how I'm going to present it. Or it also might just be a matter of money. There might be some violinist or cellist or flute player who says to the composer, hey, you write nice stuff. Write something for me. And the composer will say, I'll be very glad to. It will cost you $2,000 a minute. And the guy says, good, I think I'd like a 20-minute piece. And the composer says, fork the money over, please. And you do, and you get your piece. And there you are. And some of these things really last. Yeah. All three of the works that Zoller is playing, they've lasted. They've stood the test of time. And then there are lots of them that don't stand the test of time.
In classical music broadcasting, or serious music broadcasting, it's always exciting when someone finds a new piece and begins airing it or something like that, because you have a huge set standard of music that you play over and over and over again when you do serious music, and then to add something new to that is just wonderful.
If it is a good new piece.
The adding is wonderful. Sometimes the music is not. That's the problem with that. And I'm wondering, when these three concertos, when these three concertos were introduced, how were they received by the contemporary public?
Well, yeah. I can only tell you to a limited extent. You know, Haydn was a court composer. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, he was from a classical era. He was paid by the Duke of Esterházy, Hungarian, from the Austro-Hungarian Empire, to provide music as needed. Why the cello concerto happened then, perhaps a good cellist wandered in. Zoll can tell you all about that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so he produced the cello concerto, and my guess is that the Duke and his company liked it because the Duke kept paying Haydn to write more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a very good answer, but that's the best I can do for you. Mm-hmm. Saint-Saëns was a very, very successful composer in his day. He had a long, long life, too. And his cello concerto has just remained a staple of the repertoire ever since its beginning. People love it. I love it. You'll love it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Zoll loves it, you know. Prokofiev, as I say, he's an important 20th century voice. And if you can live with the 20th century... Well, he's an important voice of the 20s. I'm just sort of joking because it's a wonderful piece, but it's a harsher kind of music, and it's more dramatic kind of music maybe. And I don't know. I think it's worth it to hear Zoll play it. He'll certainly he'll belt it out for you.
Well, the chance to hear Zoll play it is coming up Saturday, August 30th at 7:30 p.m. Maggie, where do we get tickets again?
You get tickets either at www.junojazzandclassics.org, at the Jack Box Office, our side books, or you can call us at 463-3378. And with your purchase of your ticket, we will be serving light refreshments, and there will be a no-host bar provided.
Wonderful. And Reggie, again, this is at the Jack.
It's at the Jack.
At the Jack on August 30th. Okay, folks, we're going to go out with a piece by Brahms, played by Zoll Bailey. I always mispronounce this man's name. The pianist is...
Cellist, Awadhajan Pratt.
Awadhajan Pratt, okay. And this was, as a matter of fact, he was up here last summer.
He's been here several times.
Yeah, okay, good.
Super right. Pianist.
So that's how we'll go up. Thank you so much for coming.
Pleasure.
And telling us about this. Thank you, Maggie.
Thank you for having us.
It's just about 21 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next guest is thankfully returning after something of an absence here. I haven't seen you for a while. Maggie Hamburger is here, and she's going to tell us about what's going on at the City Museum.
Yeah, I haven't been on here for a little while. Once we put the summer shows up, we kind of just maintain for a while, but I thought I should check in with folks and let them know we do have some things going on. And I guess the first thing I want to tell people is if you haven't gotten in to see the two special exhibits that we've got up, don't miss them, although there's still plenty of time because they're up through the end of October. But The Empty Chair, the story of the Japanese internment during World War II and how that impacted the particular families and the community of Juneau in that time period, is really a well-done show, a fascinating and poignant story, and something that we should we should all know about and have in our memories and in our hearts. So come see that. And then we also have this quilt show that's just spectacular, these art quilts made by local artists in our community. So they're up through October, so there's still plenty of time, as I said, but don't be one of those people and say, I forgot to go, because they're really good shows.
The chair is actually in position now.
And
right?
The chair, yep, we had the big
up
dedication
in,
in July 12th, mm-hmm. Which was a lovely, lovely event. So people can go up to the Capitol Park and see the memorial itself, which will be there for, ever, I hope, but long, long time.
This is truly a heartbreaking story about Juneau's history and reflects on a United States attitude, but the honor that was paid to that young man is just a wonderful memory about.
Right, and the honor paid to all the individuals. As a community, we can be pretty proud of how Juneau responded to that time in history, which is not the same can be said for a lot of other communities on the West Coast, and how they might have reacted when we became frightened about our Japanese American neighbors and friends. So, but we did well, I think, by them, and so we can be proud of that, even though it's a very shameful kind of time of history.
Yeah.
And I wanted to let people know we have a big program happening next week called Juneau Explorers. It's a day camp that I do for kids, and I do it at least 1 week in the summer and in the spring break and periodically throughout the school year. But next week is our camp. We are almost full. So if there's anybody out there that is hemming and hawing, stop hemming and hawing.
Get in and sign up.
And it's mornings next week, and it's a really exciting time. I'm calling it Critters. So we are going out on lots of field trips. I have great community partners who are so generous and sponsoring us on trips like going to see the Gold Rush sled dog tours. We're going up to Sheep Creek on Monday, and we're doing bird walking with the Audubon Society on Tuesday. Alaska Department of Fish and Game has been a great partner and helping us out with bears and aquatic insects. Oh, and these cameras, these critter cams that we put up in the woods and take these motion sensor pictures. So I'm going to learn all about how to do that this weekend. So I can do that with the kids next week. And, our last partner is Gastineau Humane Society, and we're going to go out there and learn about homeless animals and how the shelter cares for them and helps, deal with that. We are full on Monday, but we still have I think we just have one spot on Tuesday and Wednesday, and a few more spots on Thursday and Friday. So don't delay. It's a fun program for kids ages 8 to 11.
How does someone put their child into the...
Well, that leads me kind of to a related thing that I want to let people know about. We are actually closed just today and tomorrow, and we have been closed on Sundays this summer as well, because this whole... new system that's being installed in the museum that was the reason we were closed for the month of May. We've been open, but work has been ongoing, and they had to shut down all the electricity in the building for these 3 days while they're transferring us from oil to electric and doing all that kind of stuff. So getting in touch right now, because nobody's in the building until I show up on Monday morning for the program, is a little tough, but they can go to the website or they can email me directly. And it's Marjorie_Hamburger at all the things. But probably the easiest thing is to go to the website, click on the Contact Us button, find my email, and let me know you're interested. You can also find on the website the information for enrolling. But just a big reminder, Monday is full. But I do have spots for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And so they should probably do that. And I'll probably be checking my email, over the weekend or whatever to see if I've got anybody coming. Or else contact us on Monday. We'll be back open on Monday. Okay. So that is imminent, those two things, the closure and the Juno Explorers Week next week. What else is going on? Talked about exhibits. Oh, a new program that's been really fun this summer, again with a kid focus, is History Time. I can go like this, History Time. So Tuesday mornings at 11, we've been having a story time with a focus on history and focus on museums, and that's been a real fun thing to do, and that happens at 11 o'clock on Tuesday morning. So we'll continue with that throughout the end of August. And then I'm actually interested in community feedback about continuing things throughout the fall and the winter. I kind of have it in my mind to maybe do something in the evening or the weekends so that those working parents can come with their kids and have fun in a story time and enjoying exploring the museum. So if anybody has feelings about that, contact me and talk to me about advocating for a good time for that to continue. But it's been a really fun thing to get families to come in the museum and just interact and have that going on. So that goes on for a few more weeks to the end of August, and then we'll either maintain or maybe shift it slightly, but kind of have an evaluation moment for a little bit. What else? Closed.
What's some of the most interesting things that have happened that I've really enjoyed at the City Museum is periodically you have presentations.
Yes.
Do you have any upcoming that we should be alerted to?
That really gets going in the fall,
yeah.
And I've got some things brewing, but haven't nailed it all down yet. But probably our first one will be in September. And it's, I think what you're speaking of is the Coffee and Collection series, mm-hmm. on Saturday mornings. Mm-hmm. Yep. So usually each once a month on a Saturday morning from like 10 to 12, we'll have a lecture or some kind of presentation. I've got some things. I think we're going to be doing some ones related to our two collections, our quilts and our empty chair before they disappear. So that's probably going to be our September and October events. And then I've got a couple other things up my sleeve that I haven't fully nailed down. But, you know, I'm always looking for people who have interesting angles on Juno history who might want to come and share that with the community. So, again, they can get in touch with me and we can find a time to put something together. I hope this year we're going to do something about Zach Gordon, because I'd love to have the community remember who he was and why we have Zach Gordon Youth Center, and we've actually got some interesting items in the collection that were his, so that's something I've got brewing. So anyhow, again, I'll call for that. And another all call, actually, that makes me think that I should mention. In the summertime, we do these walking tours on Tuesday, mm-hmm. Wednesday, and Thursday, and those are going to be ongoing, actually, through the end of September. We had some walking tours for the community in May, and they were really, really well received. And I got feedback that said, we want more for us locals. And so, again, I've got a couple of people up my sleeve who might do sort of one-shot deals with a particular focus, you know, somebody who knows about somebody wanted to do a tour about bars and saloons. That's always interesting. So anyway, if there's somebody out there who has, again, a particular knowledge of an area, I'd love to take us a little further afield to the valley and to Douglas and some of these other places and go walking.
Or you can put a bus together or something? Or?
Yep, or we might just say, hey, we're meeting, over at in Douglas or over in Lemon Creek or wherever.
No, I think that would be a wonderful idea. Douglas has some amazing history we know is not widely known. The Interpretive Trail down on the south end of Douglas is an amazing place.
Right,
and
they've really done well by that.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited. The museum is among us again. It was a hard May. Anyway, but it's back, and you'll have your power back on when?
We'll be back open at noon on Monday.
Okay, noon on Monday, so hold off going there, but if you want to sign your child up for these sound like some wonderful Juno Explorer series, then you want to go on the website, click on Contact Us, find Margie Hamburger's email in there, Marjorie_Hamburger.
Right.
And give her a quick email and let her know, because the slots are pretty much closed up.
Gone.
So we need to get on that right away.
And there's a lot of details if you click on the programs. Classes, it'll tell you.
Outstanding. Marjorie, it's a delight every time you're on the show. I just thank you so much for coming down and telling us all about the wonderful things that are going on. Come back in September
I certainly will.
And tell us about the lecture series.
Okay? Certainly will.
All right.
Thanks.
You bet.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 8th of August, 2014. It was on this day, 1929, the dirigible, the Graf Zeppelin, took off from Lakehurst, New Jersey, to fly around the world, carrying 61 passengers and crew. It took them just over 21 days. The airship had been flying for 9 years. It also conducted the first commercial passenger flight across the Atlantic Ocean, flew more than 1 million miles, flew a scientific mission over the North Pole. But the age of the giant dirigibles came to an end when the Graf Zeppelin's sister ship, the Hindenburg, blew up at Lakehurst in 1937. Nobody ever wanted to ride on another one again. It was on this day in 1818 that John Keats set sail from Scotland to return to London. He'd been on a 6-week walking tour with his friend Charles Brown. Keats had spent his life in London, never been out of southern England. He'd never seen a mountain before. So he packed a knapsack with a shirt and stockings and a nightcap and towels, a brush and comb, snuff. He took one book along with him, a translation of Dante, and he and Charles Brown set out to walk. They had good shoes. He had a walking stick. They walked through England's Lake District. They stopped at William Wordsworth's home. He wasn't home. They left a note for him. Keats discovered that he was moved by people more than by scenery. They hiked through northern England into Scotland, crossed over to northern Ireland briefly. Keats's health had been questionable before the trip, and then he developed a bad cold. And so on this day in 1818, he headed back to London. In the 1 year that followed this walking tour, he wrote some of his greatest poems: To Autumn, Ode on a Grecian Urn, Ode to a Nightingale, Hyperion. And less than 3 years later, he died of tuberculosis. It's the birthday of Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings, born Washington, D.C., 1896, best known for her book The Yearling, which was the best-selling novel in America in 1938. And it's the birthday of the poet Sarah Teasdale, St. Louis, 1884, grew up in a wealthy family who subsidized her writing and paid for the publication of her first book in 1907. Her book, Rivers to the Sea, was a bestseller in 1915, and her collection, Love Songs, in 1917. She was very successful, Sarah Teasdale, but she was very insecure. Her marriage to a St. Louis businessman fell apart. In 1931, her old lover, the poet Vachel Lindsay, killed himself, and Teasdale was devastated. 2 years later, she committed suicide with an overdose of sleeping pills. Here's a poem for today by Lewis Simpson, The Border. The time is after dinner. Cigarettes glow on the lawn. Glasses begin to tinkle. TV sets have been turned on. The moon is brimming like a glass of beer above the town. And love keeps her appointments. Harry's here. I'll be right down. But the pale stranger in the furnished room lies on his back, looking at paper roses, how they bloom, and ceilings crack. The Border, by Lewis Simpson, from Strong Measures, published by Harper and Row, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Bridges, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
24 minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska.
Search is nationally recognized and award-winning Lifestyle Balance classes begin soon and you're invited. Lifestyle Balance classes are designed to help eligible Search patients prevent or delay diabetes. Join the hundreds of people who have completed this class and learn how to improve your health. Sign up now. Classes begin in Juneau on August 19th. For more information or to register, call 364-4453 or email lifestylebalance@search.org.
As a reminder, during whale watch season, NOAA fisheries ask you to keep your distance from endangered humpback whales. Federal law prohibits pursuit or approach within 100 yards. Boaters should operate at a slow, safe speed, limit time with whales to 30 minutes or less, and avoid approaching when other vessels are near. To report a violation or distressed marine mammal, call NOAA Fisheries Hotline at 1-800-853-1964.
23 minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. It's Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next guest is here to tell us about a choir of cellos. Catherine Wilkins is here, and she is the leader of the Juneau Cello Choir.
Correct.
A small and exclusive group that only comes out on occasion around here. So
Not quite just at the full moon, but
before we were opened up the microphones, you were telling me about the formation of this group and this concert or this orchestra that you played with inspired you to start this.
Yeah, well, in the summer of 2010, I went to cello camp, and we had a large ensemble, and everybody at the camp participated, and there were 80 cellos. So it was a full cello orchestra. And I just thought it was wonderful. I love the cello as an instrument, and so it got me thinking a lot about forming an ensemble here in Juneau that would be just cellos. We have invited some bass players to join us, some bass fiddle players, but they have not yet done so. So we have just been strictly cellos. And it's a bit of an ad hoc organization. We have had different numbers of people at different times, but today at the Food Truck Friday, we'll be playing at 5:30, and we will be 8 cellos.
8 cellos.
Yes.
How do you find an arrangement for 8 to 80 cellos?
Well, there's the internet, of course. When I travel, I go into music stores and I grab what looks interesting. I happen to own a half dozen books of arrangements for cello quartet. And so what we'll be playing this afternoon are all arrangements that were written for cello quartet. And of course, we're doubling all the parts. None of the pieces that we're playing this afternoon were originally written for cello quartet. We're going to be playing pieces by Mendelssohn, Goltermann, Schubert, Franz Liszt, of course, is famous for writing piano things, but all of these things then arranged probably by cellists for cello ensembles, and so that's what we're doing.
Hmm. So I was concerned. I was wondering what the repertoire was for massed cellos.
It's limited, I would say. But it is sort of surprising that there are as many arrangements as there are for multiple groups. I mean, multiple cello groups. We have, when we've played in others, you know, like, well, I mentioned to you before the microphones were on, we've done Christmas carols several times, and those have been fairly easy to find. We played Christmas carols at the airport last year over the holidays, and also at the Juneau Public Market. That was probably our single biggest performance with 13 cellos. It was just wonderful.
Uh-huh. So 8 cellos today, and
yes,
basically doubling the parts in
exactly in
quartets.
The quartets, and it just gives a lovely full sound. The cello, of course, is very deep and, how do you pronounce that word? Sonorous?
Uh-huh.
Sonorous instrument. And it's a very full sound. We rehearsed yesterday and we were in a room, and we were sitting in a circle, so all facing each other, where you could really hear each other. It sounded beautiful. And I hope that we can recreate that today when we'll be sitting in a more open format, of course, facing the audience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you all get together regularly to practice?
No.
No.
Okay. We are a focused group. So if we have a concert and we have a and we have a program and we have specific parts assigned, then we get together to rehearse for a concert. But otherwise, no, we don't just get together to jam, as it were. That's not really in the classical tradition, I guess you'd say. So we do have a page on Facebook, I'd like to mention, and if anybody would be interested in possibly joining our group, they could contact us that way. Mm-hmm. It's not a group for beginners. We're not a teaching organization, and we expect people to have a fairly intermediate skill level to be able to join our group. But a couple of people in the group play with the symphony. Mm-hmm. Megan Johnson, who's first chair of the symphony, James Chang. I've played with the symphony. And then we have a few people who also play with the student symphony, Jenna Gunther. I believe Bailey Davenport also plays with student symphony, David Russell Jensen. And I also play with student symphony. So it's a nice mix of skill levels there.
We should mention here that this is part of Food Truck Friday, which is a wonderful thing that the Jack has been doing all summer long. Essentially, yes. There are a number of vendors who are outside who are selling various kinds of food. And you are encouraged to choose among the booths or choose all of them and have a little of each and then take it inside and sit down. And you have a half hour for each group, I think, and there's usually four music groups, I think.
I believe there's usually just three. We're the first group, and we'll go 5:30 to 6.
Okay.
And then I believe there's a group called Grayscale at 6 o'clock to 6:30, and I'm not sure who's playing at 6:30.
Okay, well, I have another guest coming up that I think is going to be performing, and that's Arthur Starbuck from Morally Impoverished, which is one of the improv groups. So maybe that the improv folks are filling in the third.
I know. Speaking for our group, we really like this venue. We really, of course, appreciate the Jack putting this together. But we like playing indoors.
Yeah.
So when it used to be the concert in the park, that was a little more challenging for us.
Yeah, it's a challenge for the cello, watching your $1,000 or multi-$1,000 instrument be rained on in Juneau.
Yes, and the sound doesn't carry as well outside. Yeah, so indoors is better for us.
Right. There have been two groups that have come to Juneau that are string quartets that play a rather strange fusion of jazz and some classically inspired music. Usually two or three of them are classically trained musicians who are, I think, taking a break from the orchestra. Does your group play that genre of music?
We have not done that. I think if we had any idea how to go about doing that, we would like to. We'd certainly like to try new things. Uh-huh. It does take a lot of skill and a lot of focus and attention. Are you talking about Break of Reality?
Yeah,
I saw them
one
a couple
of the
years ago. They were fantastic.
They were fantastic.
Yes, they were.
But I was reminded of the clown skater, who is always the best skater in the company and who comes out and falls off of his skates in the most artistic fashion in the world. They were wonderful like that in the sense that you were howling with laughter and admiring the skill.
Yeah,
at the
admiring
same time.
The skill. I think we're a little bit more of an amateur group, and as I said, we're a little ad hoc too of who's in and who's out in any given concert. So we do it for fun, and it is fun.
So it's Food Truck Friday, and it's the Juneau Cello Choir, Catherine Wilkins leading, and seven other cellists playing quartets in double pieces and like that at Food Truck Friday from 5:30 to 6. Go over, get some food, wander in, listen to the music.
This is Bird Note. This brilliant song, ringing out over a rapidly rushing western stream, belongs to an American dipper. A songbird the color of wet gray stones, the dipper looks like a large chubby wren, or perhaps a gray robin with a very short tail. Standing atop a large stone, it bobs up and down on its long legs, dipping, hence the name. But watch this nondescript bird for a moment. It steps off a small boulder, right into the torrent and begins to peer underwater. Then, raising its head, it blinks, showing white feathered eyelids. Soon, it is swimming in the stream, paddling with its feet. Suddenly, it dives and holds its place underwater with its short, strong wings against a coursing flow that would knock a person right over. Just as briskly, it pops back up on a small boulder and, using its bill, begins to hammer the casing of a tasty caddisfly larva it just picked up off the stream bottom. What the American dipper might lack in bright color, it more than surpasses with amazing aquatic abilities. It's the only aquatic songbird in North America. Ah, to be near a rushing stream right now. BirdNote is grateful to all who are working to keep our rivers and streams clean and free-flowing. Learn more at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
It's just about 13 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for what is about to become probably a chaotic portion of Juneau Afternoon. I have with me three of the people who are going to be part and parcel of this afternoon's Food Truck Friday. Lynette Hart, the Coco Diva, is here among us. She is from Gustavus and makes these incredible truffles that we're going to taste on the air as part of this little session. And I'm hesitant to introduce this guy because he's likely to take over the rest of the broadcast, and then I'm doomed back here behind the counter. But anyway, Arthur is here from Morally Impoverished, and you guys are the third performing group today from, I think, 6:30 to 7. Is that the...
I don't know. I show up and they tell me.
And they tell you when to. When
so
to.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah, I think that is too, because I just had the 6 to 6:30 cellists here, and then there's another group.
We could do a mashup with
yeah.
the cellists.
I think I
know the lyrics to Kashmir, so they could do Kashmir, and I could sing it.
Anyway, and then my third guest is Lynette's husband, who's here.
I'm a math and science teacher.
And that's an important skill that is definitely needed at Food Truck Friday.
Here to
so
add
a to word about Food Truck Friday. I just said this a couple of minutes ago when I was talking with Catherine Wilkins, but the venue is basically you go out, you get some food, you come inside, and you hear some music, and it's a great way to spend a Friday afternoon or Friday evening. So, and then, of course, you dash over to Lynette's booth and get dessert, because these things are wonderful. May we have the tasting?
Of course.
Okay. So what are my offerings?
Okay. Today I have the Alaska Sampler box of chocolate truffles.
Okay.
And there are 6 different flavors.
Ooh.
So in your box there's one each of a sea salt, sea salt truffle,
uh-huh.
raspberry, garden mint, strawberry rhubarb, spruce tip, and blueberry. And this is all, it's made out of BPA-free organic coconut milk and 72 or 61% dark chocolate. There's no added sugar or preservatives or anything. I grow the mint, I grow the rhubarb, I pick the berries.
I think the thing that's missing on the radio is the presentation.
Yes.
That's a gorgeous truffle right there, the blueberry.
The color.
They're pretty as well as very tasty. They're in an attractive box. It
describe
comes with
the
a,
colors for us, Lynette.
It comes in with a flavor chart, so you know.
Just
you know,
point the microphone right down at the chocolate so people can see the colors.
Did you get a good look at that? Here, try the mint.
Try the mint,
yeah.
And that is this one here. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's kind of a gustatory delight.
Okay.
Oh, and so you're not an English teacher?
Here we go.
He's smiling. See, people kind of, their eyes roll back in their head.
Yes.
And
fights have gotten started over
crisp,
this chocolate.
Crisp outside chocolate. Inside is this milky, immense. And the mint is beautiful. Beautiful mint. You raise good mint.
It's good mint. Mm-hmm. I have lots and lots of mint in my garden.
So, anyone else?
You want to try that?
What kind of mints do you grow?
Well, there's spearmint and there's peppermint.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple of strains.
And it's free range mint. We don't cage it.
Those of you that are aware, Jeff just walked in the door.
Oh, hi.
Jeff Brown listened to the broadcast
the
down the hall
gone,
and knew
but
what
would like
happen.
Would you like to try blueberry or spruce tip or strawberry rhubarb? All right.
Please describe the flavor and taste sensations as you're...
In a matter of seconds, the entire remainder of the KTOO staff will be coming down
here. You have to try it online.
Yeah, you have to.
Okay,
online.
But... You know,
there we go. Oh, yeah.
Never on air.
Yeah. I wish I could describe Jeff's face. His eyes are wide open in joy and delight. Those are wonderful.
Thank you.
So, do you do this in your kitchen in Gustavus?
I do. I also have a chocolate room in my home. So between the two places.
Did you pick this up out of books, or did you go to school, or how does one become capable of producing candy of that magnificence?
Well, I took a course. To be a chocolatier, I took it online, and then you just play.
So you're a registered chocolatier. Do you have a card?
I actually have a...
You have a certificate. This is a class act.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
I have a certificate as well.
Oh, do you?
Yes. My first degree was in forgery, and then all of the other ones after that are much easier. Yes.
I think he's practiced that one.
Well, I'll tell you, the other delightful thing that's going to happen over here, if you haven't seen improv, just laid loose, the group is they're off the wall.
Comedy
who
or
else
music?
Be,
or
who else
no, well, we started out 10 years ago doing short form comedy, and then we evolved into more long forms and doing getting one page from a local playwright and improvising the rest of the scene, doing one-act plays. And our comedy used to come from being funny, and now our comedy comes from, you know, not being funny, from being real and grounded.
What is short form?
Do you take a...
Short form is like the games that you might see on TV, like What's Your Line? Those are...
Oh, okay.
Or the Improv Olympics.
Okay.
Those are more competitive... comedy based, but we are going to be going to a comedy festival in Austin at the end of the month, the Out of Bounds Comedy Festival, where we're going to be performing with some 175 other acts. So it's going to be slightly warmer than here.
We actually have an improv festival here in Juneau.
We do, in the spring.
Yeah.
Where people come in from all around, from nationally.
Yeah.
Are you interested in improv?
Yeah, actually, I have an amateur comedy card that I made after my forgery certificate as well. And I'm always looking for, you know, I'm part of the comedy union, so I'm looking for a class act to join.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you're going to have to keep looking. Sorry. But we might be able to hook you up with someone.
Yeah. I have a face for radio, so...
We do a form called The Bat, where we all get up on stage, sit in chairs, turn the house lights off, and then in complete darkness do a radio show, basically, with sound effects and things where the audience can't see us. We've done that before. That's that plays to our strengths.
So who all is going to be up today?
It is going to be Eric Caldwell and myself. We're going to be doing Rorschach Pattern 9. He told me we are going to... We have not done Rorschach Pattern 9 exactly the same way twice, and he said, this is going to be much different.
I don't
know what that means.
Follows as the day the night. Yes.
So it's going to be another one of those. Uh-huh. Sometimes... They're more Dada, and it's got clowning in it, and I do not know, and I cannot tell you.
So you won't know until you actually are doing it in the true spirit of improv.
I won't know until after I've done it, somebody tells me what I've done, because I don't know what's going on up there. I really, that's part of the, when you're really in the flow of it, no idea. People come up and say, that was great, and I said, good, tell me about it. I'm really interested.
So what did you do before you did improv?
I've been a poet for about 30 years. I've done slam poetry. I've been Alaska State Slam championships. I've come in third about four times. Hmm. So I would say I'm the third best slam poet in Alaska.
Sounds like a fair
statement. I found my level. That's it. And I've written some completely unproducible plays and, just put out zines, give Jeff the latest one that we're going to be bringing down to Austin. This is our last Juno show before we head to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to combine video and a poetry zine in whatever we do down there.
What is a zine?
It's short for...
I understand it's short for magazine, but in this context...
In this context, it is a bunch of words that you print on paper and then fold in half and put a cover over and sell to people.
So it's actually,
a physical thing that we'll be selling tonight for whatever we can get to pay for our Burger Kings on the way down there.
Yeah. Back to the chocolates.
Yes.
What's
the topping on that one?
Which one?
This one.
This has...
I think you should mention flavors again.
Okay, he's pointing to the raspberry truffle.
Okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
And on top of the raspberry truffle, I have I call them grown-up sprinkles. It's real chocolate sprinkles, and then there's huckleberry sugar on there. And it's a beautiful, real coarse pink sugar.
They look like a crystallized kind of...
So those of us who have never made a truffle, how do you get the two... textures of chocolate to work?
Well, you first make the ganache.
Yeah.
And then you enrobe them in chocolate.
Okay, so the ganache.
Picky, there's picky temperatures of the room, and
okay.
And it's a process, and it takes, you mix the ganache in a certain way, and then it needs to cool. And then I form the balls, form the centers, and those cool again, and then I... they have to come to room temperature, actually, again, to enrobe them. And then you need to, you temper the chocolate that they're going to be enrobed in.
I love the word enrobe them.
Yes, they're enrobed in tempered chocolate.
Okay.
And then you, there's a timing issue for when you place the decoration on top. It can't be immediately because it's too soft, but you can't do it too late or it's hard.
The chocolate window.
Yeah.
There's a window.
Okay. Do you help with this?
No, it's been hard on our marriage, actually. I don't see her during the chocolate hours.
It's real hard.
I help in the disenrobing of the chocolates.
as have I, and it's a delightful experience. So, Lynette, what's your production level? Are you exporting? Are you selling just around Southeast Alaska?
Yeah,
Are you in demand on the internet as a chocolatier?
I'm becoming there. I have a Facebook page.
You really do?
It's facebook.com/AKCocoDiva.
Okay.
So people can go there and look at pictures and see what I'm making. Because I make the samplers, which is what I brought to Juno, but I make all kinds of stuff too. My current favorite is the Mexican mocha truffle. It's the best.
Uh-huh. You didn't bring one of those.
I didn't bring one of those, but I have the sampler with me.
Did
so
anyone
I,
notice she didn't bring the Mexican mocha truffle?
Well, it's
my current favorite.
I can go through a lot of the inventory.
It's Juno Jazz, or it's not Juno Jazz and Classics.
It's not.
It's Concert Food Truck Friday,
and
it's over at the Jack, and it's going on even as we speak. And so go over there and get some of Lynette's chocolates and watch the improv people get up on the stage and
improve.
Try to remember what they're trying to do, the improve people, yeah. And meet Lynette's husband, who is good at disrobing chocolates, which has got to be an interesting thing. Thank you very much, folks, for filling us in. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, you're in tune with KTOO in Juneau, Alaska. We broadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. And in Juneau, you can hear us on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. Time now for All Things Considered.